purely as an investor, speculate less, try to control as much of it now. And to do that, ask more present tense questions as opposed to what can tell in the future, because by definition, no one knows.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyron Shum, and in this episode, we continue the conversation with Michael Shah, who says it's not where you buy, but how you buy. Check out the strategy that enabled Shah to build a $9.7 million property portfolio by the age of 33. What you can do to minimize your risk with your next investment property, and the questions you should really be asking about potential investments. Also, before we delve into this episode, go over to propertyinvestory.com and subscribe to receive your free property investor case studies, where you'll learn how to generate passive income from your properties. Go there now to sign up for free. Shah says there were many things holding him back from investing in property, such as the prospect of buying interstate and concerns about rising interest rates.
It's actually even hard to start because everything was limiting me in the beginning. I would say that, you know, some of the ones that spring to mind was buying interstate. I still remember going to property meetups, speaking to people that had properties that were in Queensland in other states. And I was like, how the hell can you buy in another state, manage your property, you can't even see it. I was in awe of those people that had properties in another state. So, I mean, that was one of them, just kind of thinking off the top of my mind. And then there'll be other ones that, you know, you will have these concerns. What if the property price falls? What if the interest rates go up? A lot of these were things I had to grapple with as I went down the property investment journey.
The way to overcome these concerns is through developing your knowledge over time and protecting your investments.
The best way is through knowledge comes clarity. As you gain knowledge over time, then those questions become a little bit clearer. So if you just dived in and did it off the bat, then yes, it can be very, very risky. And property is very risky. Not everyone makes money from property investing. A lot of people lose money from property investing. In fact, most of the people I buy my properties from have lost money because I'm buying them cheaper than they are. But I kind of like the analogy that I put is like, let's say, for instance, you've got a safe and the money is in that safe. To protect that safe, you might put a lot of locks on that safe, and then you put, you know, kind of an eye sensor before you can get to the safe and so on and so forth. So what I'm thinking of is like an Ocean's 11 trying to break into that safe. That's kind of the picture that I have in mind. And as you do more due diligence and as you put in more processes in place, you're basically just putting in safe mechanisms to safeguard your property investment. It's not always going to be foolproof. It can still fall over, but you're just preventing that. And I'll give you examples of in terms of what kind of those safety measures are. So let's say, for instance, one of them is insurance. If you have really good insurance and you protect yourself from a lot of those things that I kind of spoke about in the first podcast, another one could be getting a really good property manager. I actually spend more time finding my property manager than the areas that I buy in, because I know if I have a good property manager, I have regular income coming in. And that is so important in keeping a portfolio a long time. I bought, you know, properties from people that had a bad property manager, didn't manage it properly, and then also they weren't getting the rental returns, and then they ended up selling that property. But if you put someone that's a very, very good property manager, can keep on top of the tenants and also the condition of the property, then the income will be a lot more regular in the future. So, you know, finding a good property manager will answer that thing. Also, then in terms of the financial structure, you know, how you structure it properly by not cross-collateralizing, maybe using different banks for different reasons, that will then add another layer on there. So the more layers that you put to protect your property portfolio, then it will actually become a little bit safer. And that's how then you can tackle those questions that you have. Oh, you know, what happens if interest rates go up? What happens if property prices fall down and so on and so forth?
And Shah shares another good example of what happens if the property prices fall.
When I buy a property, I want to make sure that I make money on the way in. So I'll give you an example. If you're buying in an area where average three-bedroom, one-bathroom is selling for $300,000, I want to make sure that I'm buying a little bit cheaper, maybe around about $260,000, $270,000, or as cheap as I can get it. That way, even if the property prices fall down or if I'm forced to sell, I can sell it and not make any losses. So that's kind of then adding another layer in terms of that safeguard. So as long as you keep putting those in place, then you can actually answer a lot of those doubtful questions that you have going into property investing.
Shah says that his mentor, Rolf Latham, was a huge contributor to the Property Chat Forum, a platform where Shah learned everything he knows about property investing.
This was probably my biggest discovery in my investment journey. This was a tipping point. You know, I said on the first podcast, Nathan was the guy that opened up my eyes. This was a tipping point, and I was finding an internet forum called Summersoft. And a little bit of background in terms of Summersoft. Summersoft was created by Jane Summers, who's written some amazing books on property investing. And she developed this forum where like-minded investors can go chat about property investing. And that forum was up and running for quite some time. And in 2015, 16, it then migrated and changed across to Property Chat. So for those listeners out there, I highly encourage going to propertychat.com.au and reading, going through that forum. That forum has about 7,000-8,000 members across Australia. And they're just average mum and dad investors that, you know, are quite savvy investing, have done quite well investing, just sharing what they do. So no one's really got an agenda. Everyone's just trying to share their knowledge. And it was actually through that forum that I found my accountant, my solicitor, and also Rolf. Rolf was a big contributor to that forum. And when I started speaking to people from that forum, networking with the very experienced investors from that forum, that's when I actually learned everything. I still remember in my early days, I would privately message experienced investors on that forum that you knew had done quite well in investing. And I basically said, can I please take you out for coffee? And you'll be surprised at how giving a lot of those investors, a lot of those personalities on that forum were. And it was through those coffee catch-ups that I learned so much more than going to those property seminars or paying for those mentoring courses. That was actually where I learned everything in investing. And I kind of put it down to association. It's like, let's say, for instance, you were speaking to someone at a family barbecue and going, look, I want to buy 12 properties in 2 years. They'll probably think that you're crazy. But when you go on this forum and you read other stories of people doing exactly the same, it almost normalizes it and gives you that motivation to achieve a little bit more. So I think it's actually that association that does a lot of that magic. And I know on that forum, they regularly have meetups. So in each of the capital cities, every couple of months, there might be 20, 30, 40 investors that get together and just have a yarn. I find those meetings, that association, to be so, so powerful.
Some of the best advice Shah has received comes down to knowing where you want to buy, then research and focus on finding both the best suburbs and the best deals.
I will tell you the question that I get asked the most. And you might be able to guess, but I can guarantee you that almost the first question most investors or clients ask me is, where should I buy?
Yes, I know that question very well.
And it doesn't matter where you are, like you'll be at the family barbecue or speaking to someone. The question that gets asked most in property investing is, where to buy? Now, I'm going to tell you that that question is actually not the right question to ask. And why I say that is, when you speak to investors that have done quite well or a little bit savvier, generally it's not really about where you're buying. It's actually more about the deal. So when people ask me that question, I'm like, I actually don't mind where I buy. You can buy in North Brisbane, South Brisbane, Ipswich, Melbourne, you know, Adelaide. It doesn't really matter where you buy, but it's actually within that suburb. It's actually the deal that makes all the difference. I can tell everyone, you know, the top 10 suburbs that I look in on a weekly basis, but you won't be able to go to those suburbs and find that deal because it takes time, it takes effort, it takes local market knowledge to know that, you know, what's a particular deal in that market. On the flip side, if you told me to then look in Adelaide, I would have no chance of finding a deal because I don't know that market that well. It's actually not the suburb, but more so the deal in itself that really makes that difference. Because if you can get a really good deal in a suburb, then yes, you will be buying it below market value, so making some money on the way in. Or maybe then that's how you get the better rental return. So if the market average is 6%, then maybe then you can get 7% or so and so forth. But it really takes to knowing your market really, really well. So the advice that I give a lot of investors is do a lot of research in terms of getting your general area correct. So, you know, whether it's Sydney, whether it's Melbourne, whether it's Brisbane. But once you've then targeted an area, focus on a couple of suburbs, become an expert in those suburbs. That's how then you can get the deals. But if you're just doing macro research on the suburbs, you could buy a, you know, you could pick the best suburb, but if you buy a bad deal in that suburb, you won't be doing very well.
Shah also advises that rather than attempting to predict the future, potential investors should concentrate on asking questions about what the property is already like, such as what the rental return is.
When I first speak to an investor that's starting out, a lot of their questions, if you break it down, are questions about telling the future. I don't know if you've noticed that in conversations, say, for instance, at the family barbecue, but I'll give you an example. Someone starting out will ask these questions. Where should I buy? What would the interest rates be this year? How much would this suburb go up by? Which areas do you think will do well? If you boil all of those down, you'll find that all of those questions are about the future. And by definition, no one can tell the future. And that's why a lot of the investors, they spend a lot of time trying to find out the future, and they go in circles. They're getting these hotspot reports. They're getting, you know, 1,000 data points. But in the end, they're confused because by definition, you can't tell the future. Now, on the flip side, speak to an experienced investor, someone that has done quite well investing, and listen to the questions that they ask about the property. They generally are, how much is it below market value? What is a rental return? Is it a good side of a suburb, bad side of a suburb? How can I improve the value on that property? If you boil all those questions down, they're present tense. They control all of it right now, right today. And because of that, in the end, they're speculating less about the future, but controlling more of their destiny now. So purely as an investor, speculate less, try to control as much of it now. And to do that, ask more present tense questions as opposed to what can tell in the future, because by definition, no one knows. Like the other example that I give is go and grab a hotspot report from 5 or 10 years ago and look at how many suburbs they got right. A lot of times, like, it's 50-50, half of them are right, half of them are terribly wrong. I still remember when I first started property investing, I was reading hotspot reports. They were telling me to buy in Gladstone, and we all know what happened there. So even the experts can't get it right, because by definition, no one can tell the future. So if there was one tip I could give your listeners, ask more questions in the present, less in the future, and a lot more clarity will come from that.
Here, Shah has touched on a very powerful strategy, as at the end of the day, a lot of people need to change their mindset and look at their potential properties from a different perspective in order to get the right results. Basically, if you don't ask the right questions, you don't get the right answers. This leads us into the next section of the episode, the nuts and bolts of Shah's Think Before You Leap strategy, that has proven to be one of the safest and most rewarding property investing options out there.
But the thing with strategies is it's very independent to the individual investor. So I'll give you some tips in terms of how I break down strategy.
Shah will also share his success making habits.
Personal habit, I think one of the things that really helps me is setting goals.
As well as what book he recommends for you to learn from.
Okay, if there's one book that I would say is a must read, it's actually Slight Edge by Jeff Olson.
And that's next. I'm Tarun Sham from Property Investory. Shah shares some useful tips on breaking down his strategy. He says it is important to determine the weakest resource and address it. He also gives some examples of potential scenarios.
I think a lot of people overcomplicate strategies. You know, there's people out there that are talking about these amazing strategies and so on and so forth. But the thing with strategies is it's very independent to the individual investor. So I'll give you some tips in terms of how I break down strategy. And it comes down to the two resources that people use in investing. There's only two resources that you use in investing. One is how much the banks are willing to lend to you, so your servicing. And the other resource is how much savings, how much equity that you have. Very rarely are those two resources in equilibrium. Always one is more than the other. So all you need to do is identify which one is less and then focus all your time, effort, and strategy on the one that is your weaker resource. Now, a good mortgage broker can identify that for you, but that will be the question I'll be asking them is between the equity and also the servicing, which one is my weaker resource? And I'll go into some examples in terms of some service, some strategy around it. So let's say, for instance, your limiting resource was equity or savings. And I'll give you an example of this. Someone that's fairly young, you know, starting out in their 20s, in their 30s, they've got a pretty good income because, you know, haven't had the family yet. They're on a single income. Maybe they're living at home with their parents and they don't have that much of a debt. So from a borrowing capacity, they're really, really good, but they've only been saving for a couple of years. So they don't have that much savings to then invest in property. Then for that particular client, their limiting resource is equity / savings. So they need to spend all their time to address that limiting resource. So the strategies that I give for that is then do renovations or do things that you can then build value in the properties or maybe buy properties that are really, really under market value. That way, once you bought that property and it's under market value and where you can access that equity, that will then allow you to move to the next property because your servicing is in surplus compared to your equity. Mm-hmm. So those types of clients should focus all their time and attention on creating value. Now, I'll give you the other end of the spectrum. Let's say, for instance, we have a family, mum and dad. Mum is at home looking after the kids and it's a single income earner supporting the family and they're looking to invest. They've had their home for, you know, 10 years. So it's had some quite a bit of growth and it's got good amount of equity there for them to invest. Then for them, equity is not really the limiting resource. It's a servicing because they've only got one stream of income. If that's the case and I'm looking at buying properties, I will look at properties that improve their servicing or add to it a little bit more than they would otherwise. So maybe buying a property that comes with a granny flat, giving you a little bit more rental income, or in those cases, not using lender's mortgage insurance, buying it at 80% because they've got excess equity, then use that equity as opposed to using lender's mortgage insurance. Or maybe it could be even improving their income. So maybe the wife works 2 days a week to bump up the income a little bit. Once they fix that income issue, then suddenly the equity then becomes accessible to them and then they can use that to progress their investing. So depending on which resource is limiting you, then all your strategy is focused on addressing the resource that's limiting you. I feel people overcomplicate it. They go to all these seminars about splitter box, about renovation, about, you know, the other ones where I forget the name, but you sign on the contract and eventually, you know, they pay you a bit of rent, then it becomes yours rent back or something like that. And honestly, it's all just fluff because ultimately when you break it down, just two resources, as simple as that. One is how much money you have. One is how much you can borrow. And then just focus on the one that's limiting you.
Shah says that setting goals is something that keeps him centered and in turn contributes towards his success.
I think one of the things that really helps me is setting goals. I touched on the first podcast that we had, how important a goal is. So I'm a big advocate of that. I feel that if you don't know where you're going, then how can you even aim or get there because you don't know the direction that you're heading in. So one of the things that I do religiously every day is the first thing that I do when I open up my computer, get to my office and I open up my diary is actually to rewrite my goals. So at the moment, I'm putting my four goals there. And then also another thing that I do is actually something that I picked up from an Anthony Robbins seminar that I went to last year. Then I write three things that I'm grateful for because I think that a lot of the times people forget that it's like, you know, there's so many things to be grateful for. So then after I put down my goals, I put three things I'm really grateful for. And after I've written them, it always gives me a lift. It feels like, you know, you're thinking of things that you almost take for granted. And then after that, I put maybe the top three or five things that I need to get done on that day. And I'll do that every day religiously and it helps me keep focus. So almost I feel when I don't do that on the one page diary that I have, I feel a little bit flustered. But once I've done that, it's almost like a ritual now. It really helps me to feel a lot more centered. I highly recommend putting what you're grateful for. That's only something that I started doing last year after I went to the Anthony Robbins seminar. And I think that's actually really something that has helped me because some days it's like you've just woken up on the wrong side of bed and that helps you center you. So I highly encourage that.
Shah recommends his go-to book for financial enlightenment, which also can provide information relating to health and relationships.
Okay, if there's one book that I would say is a must read, it's actually Slight Edge by Jeff Olson. So I won't go into it and spoil the book too much, but what I find that book is that book gives you the tools to then read other personal development or whatever book that you're into and also be able to digest that. So I think it's a really, really good book to start off with, and it's all encompassing. It's not just going to help you financially, but it will help you in your relationships, it will help you in your health. It's basically looking at how people have been successful over time versus people that haven't been successful and the things that lead to that. So I'll leave it there, but highly encourage everyone out there to read Slight Edge by Jeff Olson.
If you wish to contact Michael Shah and find out more, here's the best way of getting in touch with him.
So the best way is through email. They can email me at michael@mortgagechannel.com.au.
So thank you again to our wonderful guest, Michael Shah, as it was an absolute blast for him to share those wonderful tips as well. It's truly amazing what we learn here at Property Investory. We learn how to stick to our goals and the importance of property deal over the property location. Now, if you want to hear about Michael Shah's journey, who at 31 years old already had built a portfolio of 16 properties worth over $4 million and how he's achieved financial freedom, then visit our website at propertyinvestory.com. Simply type in the search bar Michael Shah and select that episode to listen and learn more about his story.